Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Today, Dr. Lisa and I are talking about our periods. What is a normal period anyway? This will be at least the first of a two-parter, and there's probably going to be so many more episodes in the future about our periods, about our menstrual cycles, because again, there's a lot to cover when we're talking about periods and our menstrual cycles, the hormones that are involved, and what can go right and what can go wrong. Today, we're going to really focus on, you know, getting an idea of what is a normal period, what is normal menstruation, really kind of doing a quick overview of the different phases of the menstrual cycle. You know, you can almost think of this as like period 101. And we're going to be also kind of covering, you know, some typical things that sometimes can go wrong, really kind of common abnormal things that you may be experiencing with your menstrual cycle right now. You know, also kind of covering a few tips of what you can think about if you are experiencing those things. You know, we really wanted to talk about menstruation and our periods because it's so important. You know, we can almost think about menstruation as like the fifth vital sign. You know, if you think about vital signs like, you know, our body temperature, our heart rate, our respiratory rate, like the our periods are a really great way of looking at how healthy are you and how your body is functioning. And it's, again, as women, unfortunately, it's so overlooked. It's completely under-investigated. You know, there's really isn't a lot of research done on women's health, period. No pun intended, I guess. There, and you know, as women, we're just so often we really confuse common and normal. Issues with our periods, issues with hormone imbalances, you know, even, you know, things like PMS, it's so common that we think it's normal, but it's really not a normal functioning of our bodies and of our hormone balances. So, you know, this is where we just want to start jumping in and talking about this. And even that idea of, you know, thinking about different cultures around the world and how we view menstruation and our periods is so different. And, you know, being in North America, there, you know, is a lot of, you know, embarrassment, you know, the idea of like our periods and our menstruation being an annoyance and something to hide. And really, again, that lack of celebration of that huge piece it is of being a woman. You know, so, you know, and definitely, you know, Dr. Lisa and I, I'm sure, will share that while we work a lot with women in our naturopathic medical practices with period issues, it's not like we have perfect periods, right, Dr. Lisa?
That's right. It definitely fluctuates from month to month. And, you know, we know some things that can really help us and hurt us, but it's still a work in progress, right? We're constantly getting in and out of balance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is there anything that you'd like to share right off the bat about your experience getting your period and even how it's been since having kids and being in perimenopause?
Sure. Yeah, no problem. I'll share. So I was one of the later kids in my class. I think it was grade 7 or 8 when I got my period. And I was starting to feel left out. Like it seemed like there was this secret club that I wasn't a part of. And, you know, obviously the girls didn't want the boys to know. That was embarrassing. But it was like sleepovers. People were talking about it. And I would just keep quiet, hoping nobody would ask me if I got it. So I felt embarrassed about not getting it. But boy, when I got it, I think I felt even more embarrassed. Like I didn't want people to know when I had to go to the bathroom. You know, if you were wearing a pad, you're like, oh, is someone going to hear that or see it from my pants? So it was embarrassment, I think, all around. My mom was really great and she wasn't the reason I felt embarrassed. I think it was just generally society. But it wasn't something that was really celebrated. Like my mom, you know, held my hand and coached me through what to do and was a really good support, but it wasn't really made into an event. I remember talking to my girlfriends about it, but then once we all had it, we just didn't really discuss it anymore. So it was something that was kind of kept hidden. And then growing up as a teenager, I actually had really heavy periods and a lot of cramping, and that got worse in high school and university, probably in university too, as I was starting to eat more junk food and drink more alcohol. But I thought that was normal. I thought that was, you know, what it was going to look like. I had no clue. My doctor never really talked to me about my period and what it was like and if I had cramps or heavy flow. So I just dealt with it until I got to the naturopathic college. And then when I started to make changes with my diet and with taking certain supplements, supporting liver detox, my cycle started to change. So it was still a bit heavy, but I really didn't get the cramping anymore and be like, you know, writhing on the couch. I tried not to take medications, but it would be, you know, for an hour or two the morning of the first day, I'd be really uncomfortable and couldn't really do anything. I'd almost feel lightheaded. So after I had Steward, I thought that my heavier periods would continue, but actually now moving into, I guess, closer to perimenopause, I hate to admit it, but you know what, am I 42 now? there are changes with my period. It's still coming regular. I've always had a regular period, so it comes when I expect it to come, and we'll talk about what that looks like. But the flow is really light, so there might be a little bit the first and second day, but nowhere near what it was before, and then it lasts a total of 4 days, and it kind of just peters out those last 2 days. I get a bit of PMS. For me, it's more moody, emotional. Could be really irritable, could be sad. And we'll talk about PMS, but there's a good quote. If you hate your partner 2 weeks out of the month, it's your hormones. If you hate your partner the whole month, it's your hormones. And I wouldn't say I hate my partner, but you know, those few days before your period, it's like, oh, you're chewing too loud, or or you looked at me the wrong way, or that's the wrong tone. Anyway, he knows how to, you know, deal with that. I feel bad sometimes. But yeah, my flow is definitely lighter. And then I do get a bit of those emotional swings, as well as some night sweats leading up to my period. So that's where I'm at now. But Tony, what's your experience of getting your period and then transitioning now into potentially perimenopause?
It's funny because my experience is really similar to yours, Lisa. You know, when, I got my period kind of later, you know, ish around, you know, the same time that you did grade 7. And I definitely wasn't like the first of my friends, and they started off fairly heavy. So, I mean, I remember really being worried and being embarrassed and kind of, you know, having to watch out for, you know, leaks and that kind of thing happening. And thankfully I didn't have too bad of cramps growing up, but I mean that definitely did fluctuate with, you know, different stressors in my life and that kind of thing. Definitely had mood swings with PMS, and sometimes really bad. So thankfully, you know, since I've had Frankie, you know, my thought was always, you know, after having kids, I'm going to even have heavier periods. So I was really concerned about getting my period again and kind of like, how could it be already heavier than it was before? But thankfully that hasn't been the case, but again, maybe not so thankfully. My periods have definitely been more, you know, going between regular and irregular too. So yeah, I definitely, you know, my hormones aren't ideal, and there's definitely some imbalance happening there that, again, I can really start to take some steps towards and work on with my naturopathic doctor, of course. So it's, again, it is interesting how, you know, that shift has happened since I've had kids. Whereas that, again, the idea that of what I was expecting to have happen after having kids in perimenopause isn't necessarily my experience right now.
I know, our hormones surprise us, I think, again and again, right? And it's pretty yes. amazing that we are such cyclical beings, right? Like we have this predictable cycle through the month where hormones are shifting, and we'll get into all the details, but including, you know, estrogen, progesterone, hormones released by the brain called FSH and LH that you all may be familiar with. FSH, you know, can be raised in menopause, LH to help predict ovulation. And we also cycle through our testosterone levels and prostaglandins too. So we're really supposed to follow the moon cycle. So when there's a new moon, if we weren't exposed to artificial light and we were living outdoors, we would be getting our period when there's the new moon, and we would actually be ovulating when there's the full moon. And Tony, there's other things that control our cycles too, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, and things that we've talked about in other episodes of what impacts our hormones, like stress in our life, like our blood sugar balance or blood sugar imbalance, how well our liver is functioning, our gut health, our microbiome. Again, these can cause, these issues can cause imbalances and problems, and fairly common to experience them, but they're not normal. They're not signs of normal functioning.
Totally. I know after I do like a cleanse or a detox, my next month, my cycle is amazing. You know, right after the holidays and indulging, I'm for sure going to have, you know, maybe some more mood shifts, maybe some more PMS symptoms, maybe a little bit of a pimple or something like that. But it's definitely influenced by all of those factors. And then even with who you're hanging out with, right? If you're with people that aren't on the birth control pill and you're with them a lot, then your cycles can sync up together too. So you've probably all experienced this when you're, you know, traveling with someone or living with a roommate, your cycles can get synced up too.
Definitely. And, you know, and that's, you just even touched on something that's important to kind of think about as well. You know, when that idea of when you're around someone who's not on the birth control. So especially today, we're not necessarily covering, you know, the topic of birth control, but, you know, taking the birth control pill, even using an IUD that does have progestin or hormones in it, will definitely influence your period and the phases of your menstrual cycle. So, you know, what we're talking about today is your cycle when you're not having any outside hormonal influence to it.
That's a really good point. And I think it's also good to note, because a lot of people think, okay, yeah, I have endometriosis, I have PCOS, I got put on the pill, now my periods are coming regular, I'm like healed, I'm cured. And a lot of times that may not be true, right? So it's kind of masking the problem. And then when people come off the pill, then that problem can still be there. So it's, you know, there's a time and a place for birth control, of course, but we just want people to be aware that you don't really know where your hormones are when you're on the pill. You only really know when you're not taking it. So don't get off your pill. Don't stop it without talking to your doctor, but just be aware it's kind of masking your natural cycle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even let's, you know, get into what a normal period and menstruation is. And even talking about what normal is, it isn't like there's a perfect exact period or a perfect exact menstrual cycle, because what is normal healthy function can vary from woman to woman. So, you know, it could be that your period is anywhere from, you know, 4 days to 7 days where you're having a period and a flow. And your menstrual cycle, or again, that time from, you know, the start of one period to the start of another period, could be anywhere from 26 to 32 days long. And that is healthy, normal function. You know, and again, the kind of the flow and the amount of blood loss that happens during a period can vary from woman to woman as well. You know, it can really vary, but, you know, kind of average flow is around 30 to 50 milliliters. And again, kind of what's that? Because it's not like we're necessarily,
you know, sitting there with a measuring cup,
measuring our menstrual blood with a graduated cylinder or anything like that. But, you know, if you think about kind of an average pad or tampon can hold up to 5 milliliters of blood. Or sometimes even more if it's really saturated. So you can kind of gauge it by that way.
For sure. Yeah. Those are all considered normal parts of menstruation. But yeah, like Tony said, there is a range. And we didn't mention too, what is a normal menarche? That's when you first get your period.
Yeah.
So it actually used to be a lot older. In 1840, the average age for someone's first period was 16 and a half. The range is from 9 to 18 years. But now, and you know, what are we, 2020, the range for someone's first period is anywhere from, well, the average, I should say, is between 12 and 13 years old. So it's a lot younger, and we have to look at, you know, why is that happening? And a real reason is those environmental toxins we're exposed to. So those hormone disruptors that are in plastics and body care products, etc. So it's pretty shocking, right? Like I remember one girl got her period in grade 4. That was really young. So that was the first person I remember getting it. So that's part of the, there's a lot of ranges for these numbers. And then what does a normal flow actually look like? So ideally, it starts out bright cranberry red and it ends in bright cranberry red. But sometimes people will notice brown, the beginning or the end, and we'll talk about what that means. But that's not normal. And really, we're not supposed to have any PMS. So I would love to say I never have PMS. It definitely is worse some months than others. And we're not supposed to have cramping either. So can you imagine, right? If we could all live PMS-free and cramp-free, that would be amazing.
Amazing.
Amazing. And we're not supposed to have any clots or spotting either. So some people see golf ball-sized clots. This can be a sign of a bigger problem, which we'll get into. And we're not supposed to spot between periods. Or it's not supposed to like spot, you know, for 7 to 10 days after your flow. It's weird to think about viscosity, but it really should look like jello that hasn't set. So it's not too thin and watery, but it's not too thick and, you know, clot-like too. And Tony, are there other things we should note about a normal period?
Yeah, and we'll definitely talk about this when we're talking about our, you know, the different phases. But, you know, there's your period flow, but then there's also cervical fluid or you know, vaginal discharge. And that will also change through the cycle as well. You know, and, you know, wherever you are in terms of your normal functioning menstrual cycle, whether you're on, you know, a 26-day cycle or a 32-day cycle, the key is really consistency. To kind of stay, if you are on the shorter side of that range, you want to stay on that shorter side of the range. And that really is a sign of again, normal, healthy functioning.
Definitely. No, that's a good point. Yeah, you want it to be predictable, similar every month, and hopefully mm-hmm. meeting most of these parameters. But I don't think a lot of women could say they don't have PMS or they don't get a bit of that brown blood. So we'll get into why that is happening. But before we get into the issues with your period, we want to cover the 4 phases of the menstrual cycle. So starting from when you get your period to when you get your period again. So some people aren't aware, but we actually track our periods. So day 1 is the first day of flow. And as Tony said, the length of your cycle is from day 1 of one cycle to day 1 of the next cycle. So it's just good to be aware of that. But what happens when you get your period? Well, first of all, the lining that's built up in your uterus, that was there to for an egg to implant. But let's say there's no egg, there's no fertilization, then estrogen and progesterone drop, and then your lining is shed. So those hormone signals are gone. Your body releases that lining because there's no fertilized egg there to implant. The second phase of the cycle is called the follicular phase, and this overlaps with the menstrual cycle when you're actually, or your menstrual flow. So it starts through a series of events, but the brain releases that hormone you probably have heard of called FSH, otherwise known as follicle stimulating hormone. So it tells us what it does, because it actually tells our ovaries to create these little follicles, which are sacs with immature eggs in them. So by the time we get to ovulation, which is mid part of your cycle, the healthiest egg will be released. And it's pretty fascinating to know, as females, we're actually born with all of our eggs. So that's why we go through menopause, right? Our eggs have run out. Of course, there could be premature menopause or ovarian failure. That could be other reasons. But we have all of our eggs, and every month, ideally, one is released to see if it'll be fertilized. But I think, Tony, you have an interesting little fun fact to tell people about that.
Yeah, for sure. So again, we're born with all of our eggs. So when we're developing in utero, we have all of our eggs. So there's this idea of thinking back to, even when you were, half of you was an egg in your mother, it would have been when your mother was in utero in your grandmother's uterus.
Yeah, that blows my mind.
it really is mind blowing. It might even be mind blowing where you may be listening to what I just said and are like, what? And you need a visual. We will post, a website link so that you can really get the visual of like what that actually looks like. Again, it's just, especially when I think about, things like intergenerational trauma and things that are passed down through generations. I mean, that can be kind of one of the keys, but who knew that, there's that link, almost direct link to, your grandmother.
Mm-hmm. You definitely were a twinkle in your grandmother's eye.
Or a twinkle in your grandmother's uterus.
That's right. Exactly. But yeah, getting back to that second phase, the follicular phase. So then after you create that follicle with the egg in it, the follicle starts to mature and your body releases estrogen to build that uterine lining. So your body's starting to get ready, thinking, okay, maybe this is the month this egg is going to be fertilized by sperm and we're going to become pregnant. So that's the first two phases. Tony, do you want to review the other two?
Yeah. So there is this idea that kind of the healthiest egg will be released during ovulation. And so ovulation kind of being the third phase of your menstrual cycle, it can happen anywhere from day 10 to day 17 of your menstrual cycle. So there is this idea that if you have a 28-day cycle, ovulation happens on day 14, but that isn't the case. It's not like every woman ovulates on day 14. Again, there's a range of what's normal and healthy. And again, this happens when we're fertile, when we still have eggs to release. What happens is, a rising estrogen level actually triggers the brain to release a hormone called luteinizing hormone, or LH, and that acts to stimulate one ovary to release a mature egg. And that mature egg then travels down the fallopian tube to the uterus. That's where it can be fertilized anywhere, along this journey. And that eggs can survive for 24 hours. And so again, waiting to be fertilized if there is any sperm that is there to fertilize it. Interestingly enough, I don't often think about this, but it is possible for another egg to be released right after that first egg in that same period of ovulation.
That's what happened to my mom. Yeah, because I'm actually a fraternal twin. So that means there were two eggs and both eggs were fertilized and implanted. And my sister and I are fraternal, meaning we're not identical, but we actually look really similar. So two eggs could be released, as Tony mentioned. If you have identical twins, it's one egg that's released and it's fertilized by one sperm. But then the way that egg splits, it becomes actually two separate entities, and those develop into two separate little humans. twins, but I know it doesn't. Now, normally now when people have twins, we're like, oh, it must have been through IUI or IVF where they're using, you know, medications. They might be implanting more than one fertilized egg. So that chance is real. But for my mom, it actually happened. And she didn't know until 3 days before she was giving birth.
That is wild. Could you imagine?
No, she was under the assumption she was having one baby, and then no ultrasounds were done unless there was a big like red flag to do it. So I guess she was starting to have some problems and she was really big, although this was a month before her due date. So the doctor listened with a stethoscope and said, oh, I have something to tell you. There's two heartbeats. So that was a big shock for my parents. But
wow. And I'm sure happy news too, because she was, you know, happy to have both of you, but not expecting both of you.
Not expecting, right. So yeah, that's a good point. So you can release more than one egg. And, you know, there's certain things our body shows us when we're actually ovulating, right? Tony, you mentioned about the cervical mucus changes.
Yeah. Like, how do you know when you're ovulating? Our cervical fluid can change. So what happens during ovulation is the cervix actually starts to move up the vaginal canal and it opens up, and the fluid that is released is of a fairly kind of wet consistency. So fertile cervical fluid is really kind of clear and viscous, almost like egg white. That kind of consistency.
Yeah, like a raw egg white, right?
Yeah, like a raw egg white. And sometimes, and I don't know if anyone has experienced this, but you know, sometimes that consistency of cervical fluid can actually kind of leave your vagina and actually kind of hang out, you know, in a kind of string. I don't know if anyone else has experienced that before. But that kind of cervical fluid, while sometimes a little creepy to experience,
it's actually, I hope there's really no guys listening. Sorry if any dads are listening. I don't think they would be, but
who knows? Yeah,
we're not embarrassed by it, actually. We're not embarrassed. This is real life.
But if they started listening to this episode, I'm sure they've shut it off by now.
That's right. That's right.
But this consistency actually helps sperm to actually swim up to an egg to fertilize it. So it's a good thing. So again, if you're looking to see if you're ovulating, when you're ovulating, that cervical fluid change is something that you can look for. You could also test your basal body temperature. So checking your temperature every morning, but you know, when you wake up, before you move, that can shift throughout the menstrual cycle. And there is an increase that happens in your basal body temperature, usually about half a degree Celsius. That increase will happen around ovulation, usually about 12 to 24 hours after. Most likely, you know, if you're listening to this, you may not be familiar with the basal body temperature changes or your cervical fluid changes, but you may have heard of or have even used ovulation strips. And ovulation strips actually test for the luteinizing hormone or the LH hormone. That surge happens to stimulate the ovary to release a mature egg. However, it doesn't necessarily mean that you've ovulated when you've had that surge in LH. You can have that surge in LH without any egg release. So while it's linked to ovulation, it doesn't mean absolutely that you have ovulated at that time.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point to note. So we use it to help predict when we potentially ovulated. But it's best if you're tracking your cycle, if you could do more than one of these, right? Just to confirm. So do your basal body temperature. Yes, it's a pain every morning. I've been there. I was doing it when I was trying to get pregnant with Stuart. You know, getting familiar with your cervical mucus. So when you wipe, some people will insert their fingers and check around, you know, day 10 to 17 to see what that consistency is like. And then you can, you know, layer on the LH test strips if you like as well. So it's really learning your cycle in your body, right, Tony?
Absolutely. Yep. And then after ovulation, you know, if your egg isn't fertilized, then there's the follicle turns into a corpus luteum. So what happens is estrogen and progesterone drop, if the egg isn't fertilized, and then you again get your menstrual period again, you get your flow. But before that happens, it's called the luteal phase. It's the fourth phase of the menstrual cycle. So the follicle that isn't fertilized turns into the corpus luteum. It's actually releases progesterone. And, I've heard it described as, you are making a small little endocrine gland every month that you're not having a fertilized egg, because it is releasing this this hormone, progesterone, which you can kind of think of progestation. Progesterone is really important for fertility. It keeps the uterine lining really thick. It makes sure that the uterus is ready for implantation. And the length of your luteal phase, that fourth phase of your menstrual cycle, really the length of it depends on how long your progesterone is maintained, and even kind of how high your progesterone level can get. Often you'll see when if you are tracking your basal body temperature, that there is a rise in temperature when that progesterone is on the higher side. And in that phase, estrogen typically remains low. A lot of women, and even, I've described it before when I was on my fertility journey, I had definitely some issues with my luteal phase because I didn't have a very high progesterone level. And that's a really common thing for women to experience, especially in perimenopause, is a low progesterone. And so that can kind of, shift and cause issues in that phase in the second half of your menstrual cycle before you're getting your period. So, premenstrual issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really fascinating with the corpus luteum, right? As it's almost considered like a separate temporary endocrine gland because it's making those hormones. But that's such a like metabolically active process that no wonder we crave carbs or we're hungrier, because we actually need more nutrients and calories during that time. Of course, it doesn't have to be the bag of chips or, what we normally reach for. But during our cycle, we have different nutritional requirements as well as different types of exercise we should be doing. But we're going to delve into that in the next episode we cover on periods. But I just wanted to plant that seed that all this stuff will fuel our ability to think, focus, how we should exercise and what we should eat.
Absolutely. And then, if we're not getting pregnant, if you are getting pregnant, if your egg is fertilized, then it then tells your body to release your HCG, which is the hormone that's actually you're testing for when you're doing a pregnancy test, and that stimulates the release of again more progesterone to support the thickness of the uterine lining to support a pregnancy.
So it's pretty amazing, right? It's such a complicated system, but it works like an orchestra, and we want to support each of those phases. And we'll get into, some are abnormalities, but a lot of the treatments that Tony and I and many naturopaths do, we take into account where you are in your menstrual cycle. How do we support progesterone in the second half of the cycle? How do we support the right level of estrogen? Sometimes it's too much in the first half of the cycle. So we really need to understand those to be able to then individualize treatment for each person. But now we can get into some abnormalities. Tony, are we ready for that? Do you want me to jump in?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Let's jump in for sure. Yeah.
So a big one that I hear, so a lot of people notice brown flow. So it's, the start of their period, it's more brown and dry. It's not that bright cranberry red flow. And this is actually old blood from your last period. So this means your body hasn't totally cleared out the lining from your last cycle. So we call this a stagnation in Chinese medicine. So things are blocked and not moving out properly. It could be caused by several issues, but typically it's caused by low progesterone. So maybe that corpus luteum didn't make enough. Maybe you actually made more cortisol because the building blocks for progesterone and cortisol are the same. So if you're making a lot of the stress hormone cortisol, you can't make as much progesterone. So I think that's a major reason why there's a lot of people now with PMS symptoms, perimenopausal symptoms. Of course, the environmental toxins, the hormone disruptors are aggravating that as well, but that could be a sign, that brown blood of the low progesterone. But there could also be actual physical things that have been done to the uterus. So from a C-section or a D&C or abdominal surgeries or even trauma to the abdomen, there can be scar tissue, misalignment where things aren't flowing properly so that blood can stay trapped in the uterus. So the key thing to help with stagnation is, first of all, get moving. So walking, exercise, abdominal massage. There's something called our Vigo massage. We'll link to that, but that's Mayan abdominal massage. So it's pretty cool stuff where it's targeted specifically to people with menstrual problems, you know, or people post C-section, those with endometriosis, but even getting other body work therapies like osteopathic treatments, craniosacral, yoga therapy. These are all going to help to get the stagnation out and get things flowing and moving properly. Another common tool we use for this stagnation, so even liver stagnation and supporting liver detox, is castor oil packs. So they're really easy to do. You apply castor oil to a bit of material, whether it's flannel or cotton. And for your period issues, you'd actually place that on the lower abdomen with a heating pad for about 20 minutes. And you try to do it a couple times a week, ideally a few nights in a row. You don't typically do castor oil packs when you have your flow because that heat can make your flow come out a lot quicker. It's not going to make you have a heavier flow in total, but it just might be heavier when you're, you know, soon after putting that castor oil pack. But the castor oil has anti-inflammatory properties and the heat helps to move things out of the uterus, so you don't have that brown blood. And then, of course, addressing the low progesterone. So if it's stress, we need to work on that. We've talked about that a lot before. There's even herbs like Vitex that can help support progesterone, B vitamins, especially B6, but a complex can help too. And then you can also consider using micronized oral progesterone or bioidentical progesterone cream that typically is used in the second half of your cycle from ovulation to when you get your period. Did I cover everything about the brown flow issue, Tony?
Yeah, you definitely covered everything that way. And even, you know, talking about kind of castor oil and really supporting circulation kind of reminds me of one of our mentors, a naturopathic doctor in Ontario, Verna Hunt, has a great saying, and I don't know if you've ever heard this one, Lisa, where when she recommends women using castor oil, she recommends that they put it on from boobs to pubes.
Oh yeah, I've heard that. I love it.
I love that saying. And I tell that all the time to my female patients because it's really catchy. And, you know, how could you forget that saying?
That's a good, yeah, good visual for sure. So yeah, you could do a whole castor oil pack for the liver, the abdomen, all mm-hmm. at the same time too. That's a great tip.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, you wouldn't want to use that during your period, especially if you have an issue like having heavy bleeding and again, whether it's just heavy bleeding or whether heavy bleeding with clots or again, there's that idea of spotting or starting and stopping. Great to use castor oil in between your periods, but you definitely, you may really want to stay away from it when you're actually getting your period. And if you're having an issue with any of those things, you know, most often that can really be a sign that you have higher estrogen levels or a relative estrogen dominance compared to your progesterone levels. This can also be a sign of or be linked to fibroids in the uterus. It can be linked with endometriosis or even polyps. So that's where, you know, making sure that you're really, if you're having those issues, that you do get an assessment done with a doctor and getting, you know, ultrasound imaging just to make sure that there is no issues that way is important. If, you know, that those kind of issues are ruled out, even to help to support those issues, we definitely look at things like supporting liver function, doing some support for detoxifying our estrogen levels and making sure our body can properly process those estrogens and eliminate them. So, and then often we need to look at, again, gut health, because that's how we eliminate our hormones as well. Another idea to kind of think about, especially if you're having heavy bleeding, is, the problem with low iron. And it's kind of a chicken or the egg kind of issue where when you do have low iron, then you have a higher tendency to have heavier periods. And then those heavier periods have you lose more iron. So it's just kind of this vicious cycle that you can get into. Another issue can be an issue with low thyroid function too. So those are all things to really that need to be considered and that need to be kind of ruled out when we're looking at especially things like heavy bleeding and clots or starting and stopping of the period. So depending on exactly what's going on with you, there are different ideas of how to support your period so that you're not having that heavy bleeding and you're not, you know, looking at a really extreme option like a hysterectomy. There's a lot that can be done before going to that end of the spectrum to look for solutions. In our practice, we often look at things like having our patients consider iron supplementation or supplementation with different nutrients like DIM or I3C, which can help to support taking care of higher estrogen levels, things like curcumin or turmeric, green tea. There's different nutrients like N-acetylcysteine that help the body to support your glutathione production, which is really important for your detoxification and elimination of your hormones. There's also, wonderful herbs like yarrow, like capsella, a milk thistle. So there are a number of different, herbs and nutrients that can be used to really help to deal with this issue that a lot of women experience.
Definitely. Well, those are all really good tips too. I like the saying with estrogen too, and you probably heard it, but you want to use it and then lose it. Because a lot of women might be like, what? I thought estrogen's good for me. But a lot of us have this estrogen dominance through those xenoestrogens from the environment, through not making enough progesterone, or it could be relatively deficient. So we also need to ensure there's regular bowel movements, right? If someone's constipated, they're not going to eliminate. There's bad types of estrogens, the way we metabolize it, and you can have excess types of estrogen. So you want it to come in, have the action where it's supposed to act. So protecting the vaginal tissue, for example, supporting bone health, supporting fertility, but we want to eliminate it and detox it. So if someone's constipated, they're definitely more likely to have those estrogen dominant symptoms of the bleeding, clotting, fibroids, endometriosis. You know, if their gallbladder isn't working properly or they've had it removed, we need that bile to help eliminate as well. And then beer, right, Tony? That can, I always like to joke around, if people drink too much beer, especially guys, they could get man boobs because the hops in there is estrogenic too. So that can all add up to the perfect storm of hormonal imbalances.
Absolutely. And then on the other side of things, there's women who do have a shorter flow or a really light flow or missed periods or longer cycles. And again, this is kind of where I'm leaning towards right now, which most often is due to low estrogen. And it is, kind of a likely issue to happen in perimenopause as well. Now, if you weren't in perimenopause, or you were a younger woman, if you were experiencing this, then one of the things that we would look at is, are you underweight? Are you over exercising? Is there an issue with not having that proper hormonal support when you're younger, which is definitely an issue, but it's definitely more likely to happen in the perimenopausal phase of life. So what we would want to look at is really supporting the body's production of estrogen, making sure that women are eating enough protein and healthy fats in the diet so that they can get the cholesterol that is the building blocks for your hormones. And that may be through making sure that you are eating enough eggs or using plant sterols or other nutrients. With the heavy bleeding, you would want to avoid things like beer and hops that have an estrogenic effect. When you have a short flow that is due to, lower estrogen levels, you want to really support and take in some phytoestrogens, things to think about like ground flax seeds or even traditional forms of soy like miso, tofu, tempeh can be really supportive that way. There are herbs like colophyllum, black cohosh, red clover, or even just looking at bioidentical hormone creams can be supportive that way.
Yeah, those are all great supports for that low estrogen. I'm definitely moving into that too with the lighter flow, hot flashes at night before my period and trouble sleeping. So low progesterone, possibly low estrogen. So it's good to be aware of that. Less commonly, people might get periods that are coming every few weeks. So a lot of times in perimenopause, they might have a normal cycle and then they go 2 or 3 months without a period and then they get it. But sometimes someone gets their period every few weeks. They're like, oh my gosh, I have it again. I just finished it. So this is can be a sign of perimenopause for sure. So those hormone imbalances we talked about, but also to consider the low thyroid function may be contributing to that. And the perimenopause, obviously the low progesterone too. So we won't delve into that too deep, but that's something to be aware of. And then the cramping, as we mentioned, is not normal. It's common, but not normal. So it can be due to high estrogen and there's more inflammation in the uterus and the body. So a lot of people notice when they eat more anti-inflammatory foods, they cut out the major inflammatory foods like sugar, dairy, gluten, alcohol, etc., that their cramps go down or are eliminated, and even adding in some natural anti-inflammatories, ginger, fish oil, curcumin, turmeric, and even supporting liver detox can help with that high estrogen, using those castor oil packs, but of course away from your flow too. And one of Tony's favorite nutrients, magnesium, really helps the muscles. Even the uterus is a muscle too, so it helps it to relax as well. So that can be really beneficial, because I know so many people out there, their cramps are so bad. I have seen patients where they're taking, Advil 2 or 3 times a day for the first 2 days. They might even go to a leave, something stronger. But we want to make you aware, we understand you're suffering and you need some support, but we also want to look at some natural solutions, because those medications can impact your health too. So those NSAIDs that they're called, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, contribute to leaky gut, which can impact a whole host of things. You can listen to our episode on that. They have nutrient depletions as well, like folic acid, melatonin, iron, and they can impair our liver too. So some people use Tylenol. So yes, it may be less severe on the gut, but it can reduce your glutathione levels. That's your major detoxifying agent too. So over time, you could still have issues from overdoing it with the Tylenol.
And I definitely agree that we don't want you to suffer. We don't want you to just have the cramps. It's about looking at why you're having the cramps so that you don't have to take the painkillers, in the first place. So it really is getting down to the root cause. And that's definitely something to think about too. If you are having that PMS, if you are having mood swings or headaches, breast tenderness, bloating, changes in your stool, cravings, fatigue, changes in your libido, or again, having some of those hot flashes or heat symptoms that I'm also having too in perimenopause, you really need to look at why are you experiencing those things? You know, what kind of hormone balance is involved? Oftentimes what can be involved is that low progesterone, high estrogen, but there can even be low thyroid function, low iron, which is causing that as well. So while, again, there's definitely nutrients that you can look at to support that, you also want to look at what could be contributing to that PMS. Things like looking at reducing your caffeine intake, your coffee intake, tea, and chocolate intake as well. And even looking at different nutrients, even like a nutrient like iodine for some women can really help with the breast tenderness that they experience in PMS.
That's multifactorial, right? And a big one for people is, they don't get enough iron, right? So that fatigue before your period, that insatiable hunger, a lot of times that can be a sign of low iron too in the heavier period. So really get your iron levels tested. You want to make sure you're taking the right amount in a best absorbed form. And you don't want to take too much iron because that can act as an oxidant. But hopefully this discussion will leave you with some things to think about, some tests to ask for, see your medical doctor, see your naturopathic doctor, and get to that root cause for sure.
Yeah, and we'll definitely be talking more about testing in future episodes as well. So definitely check that out.
Great. Well, now, Tony, we'll move to the next part of the podcast. I want to ask you about your super mom moment. I'm sure you have a lot to share, but could you pick one this week for us?
Well, the one that I'm most proud of right now is, just recently, what's been happening is, Frankie has a definite nap time. And I used to be able to, do errands, go out, drive around with her, and she'd fall asleep. I'd be able to transfer her back into the house, and she would be able to nap, and that was great. And then there was a point where that didn't happen anymore. So then it was like, okay, we cannot be anywhere but inside of the house when it's nap time. Now, the other day we were playing outside. We were, hanging out around the neighborhood, and she wanted to go in the stroller. So I thought, okay, I'll let her go in the stroller. But I was really kind of watching because we were close to nap time and I didn't want her to fall asleep in the stroller. But I got far enough away from the house where once I noticed that she was tired and headed back to the house, she still fell asleep before we got to the house. So I went, I took her, I thought, okay, I'll try this. I'll see if she'll be able to stay asleep. And she did. I Woo-hoo! Had a successful transfer from stroller to bed for her nap time. And she slept like a champ. And I think I was able to nap as well at the same time. So I was just
amazing.
So proud of myself.
That's a great job, Tony. I know that's so sacred, right? I remember Stuart, we couldn't, he would always wake up if he was in a stroller in the car. So we'd do whatever we could to keep him awake. But you did the transfer successfully. Woohoo! And you got
Absolutely.
Your break.
Yay!
You're doing a great job.
Thanks. So Lisa, do you happen to have a mama mess up?
I do. So I guess it was this past week. I had Stuart outside. He was riding his scooter up and down the street. Of course, we were practicing social distancing. And I knew that Pete was going out to pick up an order actually from the LCBO. So I knew he was leaving soon, but I wasn't really like trying to get Stuart off the street to go to a different one. So we were just riding up and down. And then I saw Pete pull out and drive down the street. It's a one way. So he had to come the way like where we were down at the end of the street. And I thought, oh, this will be fine. So I'm like, oh, look, Stuart, it's Daddy. So I even drew Stuart's attention to Daddy in the car driving away. And he lost it because he wanted to go. He really loves shopping with Pete, my husband. And he hasn't been able to do that, right? Because we don't want him to get close to people or run up. That's their usual Saturday routine. So that's one of his favorite things to do. And he was trying to get in the car because Pete stopped to say hi. And then he just lost it. So I think it was about 15 minutes of me consoling him on the curb while Pete drove away because there was a car behind him and he was so upset. So I was like, next time if I know Pete's going out and I have Stuart outside, I got to take him to the next street over for sure. So that was a big mess up.
Oh, poor guy. Again, it's so hard to, you know, you just can't explain it to them when they're that age.
I know, they feel it so bad.
Oh,
totally. So anyway, we got through it. But now I want to hear, Tony, what's your mama must-have of the week?
Well, you know, thinking about periods, you know, definitely a must-have for me over the years has been using the Period Tracker app. You know, there's a number of different apps to actually, you know, track your menstrual cycle. And we'll definitely talk more about these in, you know, our next episode on periods. But for me, what has been really fantastic is using the Period Tracker app. It's really simple. And it's something that has really helped me just kind of keep tabs of my symptoms, get a sense of where I'm ovulating. So that was really helpful, especially when I was working on fertility and getting pregnant.
I love that, Tony. Yeah, there's so many great apps that out there. So we'll delve into that a bit more the next time. I guess I was a little bit old school. So one of my mama must-haves is called the Geritherm thermometer. So it's a non-metallic thermometer. It's made of glass and inside it's like an environmentally friendly, non-toxic kind of solution. I don't actually know what it is, but it's very, the thermometer is very sensitive. The only pain is you have to leave it under your tongue or under your armpit, usually under your tongue for about 3 to 4 minutes, but it's very sensitive and accurate by 0.1 degrees Celsius. I always wonder about those battery powered thermometers, how accurate they are. So that's what I use to track my basal body temperature leading up to the time that I got Stuart. So that's a great one. And then for all those that get salty cravings with PMS, I love the Real coconut flour tortilla chips. I don't know if you've tried them, Tony, but they're so good.
They have
like a pink Himalayan sea salt one. So it's basically mostly made out of coconut flour. So it's lower carbs, a little bit of protein, some healthy fat in there. Of course, it's still a processed food, but it's a good alternate if you want to avoid the corn tortilla chips. So I really can't buy them that often because it's so easy to devour the bag within 2 days. So I guess at least I'm not eating the whole bag
delicious.
In 1 day, but I try to split it up in 2 days before my period. So so they're really good.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, I'll have to check them out for sure, Lisa.
Or don't, because then you'll be addicted.
Or don't.
Yeah. Save yourself.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. I don't know if I could stay away now that you've mentioned them, though.
I'm sorry.
No worries. So thanks everyone for joining us today. We really appreciate your reviews. And if you want to connect with us, touch base, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook and visit our website, perimenopausalmamas.com. That's where we put our show notes up. So you can see all the links and info that we talked about today. If you enjoyed this episode, please, you know, give us a 5-star rating and review, subscribe, and tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too.
Have a great week, everyone. Until next time.
Take care.